Welcome to the first episode of Tech Team Bytes. Today we will speak with Yvonne Winter, co-founder of FlyNow Aviation, about disrupting the new industry with urban area drone transport. We will bring you closer to the establishment process from the founder perspective. So enjoy your first insight from our today's first episode. Today we are here with Yvonne Winter. So welcome, Yvonne.
Thank you very much for having me here. I'm really excited to have this talk. And yeah, my name is Yvonne Winter. I'm CEO and co-founder of FlyNow Aviation, and I'm really excited about our talk today.
Thank you, Yvonne, for coming. I'm also happy to have you in this podcast and discuss how it is disrupting the industry, especially in your case, in drone flying industry with different new technologies. And I believe this might be a bit difficult journey in the beginning.
Indeed, absolutely. It's not only a new means of transport, it is a whole new industry. And as well, the entire ecosystem needs to be developed. This is a huge effort to take and an exciting journey.
When you said that you have to, in the beginning, start growing the new market, what does it mean from the founder perspective to start enhancing a new area which before haven't been established? How do you approach this initial phase?
Yeah, so maybe I describe first a bit what we are doing so that everyone is on the same page. We established our company 2019 in Austria, and what we do is an electric helicopter. We call it eCopter. It belongs to the family of eVTOLs, electric vertical takeoff and landings. And you can sum up all the different air taxis, be it a single, a twin-seater, a four-seater, or whatever. All the electric, vertical, starting eVTOLs that are for an urban transportation or as well interurban transportation set.
Does it mean that you are focused into the futuristic picture which we have seen as a kid in the movies? And having flying cars and transportation within the cities.
Yeah, absolutely. We observe that in many big cities, we reach the limit of ground-based transportation systems. And you, of course, you can dig holes and you can establish a metro system and so forth. But as well here, we are on the limit. And therefore, we need to come up with different solutions. And actually, the problem of congestion is a very old one. If you think back to Rome and when the empire was growing, everyone delivered stuff to Rome. So what they basically needed to do is to close the roads for transporting goods into the city during the day and only allow that during the night. And then London 500 years ago and so forth, we always had the same problem. And then some other solutions were established. And this is an ongoing topic. And now we are on the edge of the new development, which is bringing the mobility from the two dimension into the third dimension, which is basically the air, which is free to use.
And you mentioned that in the past, the transformation have been changed because of some limitation. What do you see as a limitation at this point? How we need to enhance the society and move it to the another dimension, which is air. So what is the turning point?
Yeah, so there is a lot of limitation factors. First of all, it's the regulation that needs to be set up for this, what is called low altitude economy. What does that mean? This is the airspace, which is currently not used. And the issue there is we have the smaller drones up to 25 kilogram, which are operated under UTM. And then we have the large helicopter planes, etc., which are in the certified type 1 category, which are under air traffic control. And what is required now is to bring everything under the same umbrella for this specific altitude. In order to have thousands of different vehicles, smaller drones, eVTOLs, emergency helicopter, and so forth in the defined airspace. And this is basically the challenge that we are facing and that regulators are facing, because they need to set up a system or regulations for something that is not existing yet. And you can imagine this is quite challenging. And when we go back into history, then you see when the car came out, there was this red flag act in UK where someone with a flag needed to go in front of the car to warn the others that he's coming. And then more and more cars came. We had horse carriages. We had cars at the same time. A lot of chaos, a lot of accidents occurred. Till step by step, the regulations were set in a way so that all the different parties can be at the same time moved safely from one way to another. And basically, this is the challenge that we are facing now and that needs to be established.
For me, it's quite interesting to also understand the process behind. I believe there are a lot of hurdles which you have to face in this process. How, from the perspective of founder, you can give insights how to overcome this transition when you are building up a new area? What are the strategies to help other founders, which they can use while influencing a new industry in the market?
Yeah. So first of all, you have to be solution driven and you have to be fully convinced of what you are bringing. And this needs to come from inside. Otherwise, you get lost on the way. Because when you are not shining from your inner side, and if you're not driven to do that, to go that journey, you will definitely fail. This is the first and most important prerequisite. And then, of course, you have to know the market, you have to know the surrounding, you have to really have the understanding of the technology that you are bringing or the product you are bringing. You have to have the right team. And last but not least, but very important, you have to get the funding. Mm-hmm. And this is a huge challenge, especially in the European environment, where you don't have the tools or there are different funding pools. And yes, there are investors, private investors and so forth. But don't underestimate the huge challenge in order to get the money to get going. And if you're already starting with nothing, then I would really recommend to think twice, because the likelihood to fail is quite high, to be honest.
From what you mentioned, I believe that in your case, there is a huge driver. You mentioned that you have to have a strong belief. What it is in your case?
I truly believe that we are on the edge of new developments and the requirements that we have in how we commute in future. And mobility is closely linked to economic growth. Without mm-hmm. mobility for people and as well for transporting goods, there is no economic growth, first of all. And second, mobility is a human right. It literally changes your perspective. Again, go back to history when you had only a bicycle or you were on foot or per horse carriages, you could have a specific circle around where you can go to. Then when the car came out, this circle went bigger. Then we had planes and now you can fly all over the world. And it changes your perspective. It changes your mindset. And this is what mobility is about. And then we strongly believe that now we are on the edge of the next industrial revolution. So when you see the three industrial revolutions, they were the basis of our prosperity now. Mm-hmm. Then the Germans invented the fourth industrial revolution, which is not really an industrial revolution, but let it be that way. And the question is, what comes next? What is the next step, the next evolution, the next development? And from our perspective, it is the decoupling of the amount of resources and energy needed in order to have the same standard of living or even higher, at the same time, have a better quality of life. What does it mean? So far, we increased our standard of living. But at the same time, we created a lot of issues for the environment. And we definitely reached the limit of what our Earth can take. And we are running out of resources. And that gets more and more clear. I give you an example. When our CEO went to China, he was there responsible for the whole platform for battery and fuel cell cars at Great Wall Motors. When you then develop a new vehicle from scratch, you first think, okay, where do I get all the resources? How do I build it? And then when you go to an alternative drivetrain, especially in e-mobility, then you think about lightweight because of the battery capacity. And then you think of aluminium for it. And when you go into aluminium, then you do your research and say, okay, I want to build millions of cars. And then you find out there is literally not enough bauxite on the earth in order to do it. And this is the limitations that you have to take into account. That coming back to your question before, yes, you have to know the limitations and you have to know the market and you have to know where you get the resources and you have to know how you distribute them and how you assemble them and how you do the process and so forth. So this is a whole chain. And coming back to this fundamental change we are in is we have to find a way as humans to reduce the amount of energy and resources and to create the same or better standard of living and preserve our environment in order to have clean air, in order to have nature, in order to not destroy everything and take into account all the side effects that we create by the way we live.
When you are mentioning that it will dramatically change how we protect our environment and the impact of the industries, what do you believe we will change with this fly transportation? How it will impact in the end our sustainability and the economy itself?
Very good question. If you look at the ground-based transportation, we have now battery electric cars, and in average, they are 2 tons. So you have to have 2 tons of resources, and in average, in one of the cars is sitting 1.3 passengers. So you use 2 tons from going from A to B, transporting 1.3 passengers. And the vehicle in average is used for 1 to 1.5 hours a day. The rest, it is standing somewhere. Our empty weight for the single seater is around 300 kilo. For the twin seater, about 370 kilo. So we can build almost 7 of out of the same resources for one car. This has a huge impact. At the same time, the average kilometer a car is driven per day is 34, 36 kilometers. Let's assume it's 40 kilometers. We can do 400 kilometers a day when we put into account all the no-fly times because of the weather, charging, and so forth. And let's assume we only operate it for 5 hours 20. We can go up to 12 hours, but let's assume only 5 hours 20. Let's assume we operated only 275 days. Then still we can have in average 400 kilometers per day. So we can substitute 10 cars.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge number.
To do the same personal kilometer that is required. And with a lot less resources per vehicle. And then we don't need roads, bridges, tunnels, and so forth. If you calculate that you need for 1 kilometer of outdoor way, you need 30,000 tons of sand, and not sand from the desert, because this is unsuitable. The sand from the desert is too round and too fine to create a road. So where do you get the sand from? From the ground of the ocean and destroy everything.
To be honest, as you are describing this, it's totally changing my perspective and reflecting back on your journey. If you have to establish such a disruptive company again, what would you give as advice to other founders to start with, or where to start? What would be your first step?
So you have to have the necessary knowledge. And if you don't have the necessary knowledge, bring people in who have the necessary knowledge. So in our case, our CEO, he is a pilot himself. He's a mechanical engineer. He developed 6-year satellites. Then he went into the automotive industry to Opel, Porsche, to BMW. he did the whole vehicle concept for the i3, the i8, the Z4, the Gran Turismo, and so forth. He is one of the only person of the world that actually built 3 hydrogen fuel cell cars. So he knows how to set up a vehicle and he knows how to industrialize, which is very important. And only if you have this certain knowledge, then it makes sense to found your own company. Mm. And we observe that with a lot of competitors where the founders come directly from the university or from gaming or from different other backgrounds. And they really struggle with industrialization. They struggle with basic physics, with the whole vehicle architecture, with aerodynamics, and with different other issues. If you, again, look back to history, because I think it's always a good reference point, you can see that if Porsche or many other inventors, they all were around 50, be it Ferrari, be it Lamborghini, be it, name it. They all had a certain amount of experience and knowledge before they founded their own company. And then you should have a certain background, a financial background, because there will be tough times in this journey. And you as well need to be prepared to sacrifice yourself and to sometimes not keep the same standard that you had before and really say, okay, I am in with everything it takes. And if you're not prepared to do that, I would not recommend to start a company because it takes a lot. And it takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of time. And be prepared that it's not a 14-hour week. It's a rather 70-hour weeks, and that there is no holiday and that there is no work-life balance and all of that. Keep that in your mind. If you're going this way.
I call it work-life integration. You mentioned second time financing and that there are issues within European Union. While you are scaling such a company with financing from the institutional point of view. So what do you see as a potential change European Union can make in order to help the companies grow in these regards?
Yeah. See, the problem that we are facing here, be it in the DACH region and be it in total in Europe, is that R&D is financed or mainly not financed by government or by support. So if you look, for instance, into the US, then you have DARPA or you have different organizations where the R&D is financed. And then there is a spin-off or an accelerator out of that. And there is backing from the government money. And when everything is set, then the private investors come in and have a very little risk. And therefore, they accelerate the whole process. And it's a different setup that we are facing in Europe. And yes, in Germany, for instance, they founded the Institute for Sprung Innovation, for Leap Innovation, basically. But I always observe that Raphael, who is the leader of it, what he is facing in topics in order to allocate money to specific developments. So yeah, we have a problem on financing the R&D, which is necessary in order to have the preparation to get at a scale-up phase. So this is the first major hurdle that we have. Yeah, and as well that people in Europe or investors in Europe are very risk-averse. And yeah, everyone wants to jump into a nice business model that is where you already generate revenue. But to get a groundbreaking, real new development finance is a challenge. And as well, the banking system is not prepared for. Again, look at the US, look at other countries where there is risk money as well from the banking side. In Europe, you don't find
that. And if you compare Europe with the US, what do you see as an advantage in US compared to our region from the financing point of view?
First of all, there are different financing tools. And as mentioned, there is larger funds for R&D finance. there is a better setup for startups, be it cohorts and so forth, which is slowly developing in our region as well. But the whole environment is more set for startups, and the ecosystem is different. People look at them different. So here you are a founder of a startup and everyone is not taking you serious. In the US, it is different.
We will continue with Yvonne Winter in the second episode, where we will discuss more thought-provoking topics on the future of ongoing transformation and the strategies required for the regional development. Thank you for the listening and see you in the next episode of Tech Team Bytes.